lot of people out there shilling stuff that just doesn't make sense. This thing I saw on TikTok, it's like a monocle, right? TikTok ad is like showing you zooming in on some chick on the beach. Bought one to see the funnel. This thing sucks. It doesn't even work. And I'd rather build a real business. So,
hello and welcome to Hustle Over Everything podcast. This is the podcast where we receive stories, tips, and tactics from entrepreneurs who have done it. And today we have an amazing podcast of part two. We're talking about drop shipping, and you have a great guest in the building. Before you get to that, Owen, my guy, what's good with you, bro? How you doing?
Man, great week so far. We've been receiving a lot of feedback from our previous episode that we just dropped this Monday. And then also another topic that we covered was Kevin Samuels passing away and my thoughts of who he was as a man and what he meant for the Black community. Some negatives about Kevin Samuels was that he spoke very bluntly, where a lot of women were very offended by the way he spoke. He said some stuff in his lives by calling women linebackers. I disagreed with everything that people were saying, that who he is and what he stands for, because at the core of it, he was trying to help people get closer together, especially create more Black marriages. So by me speaking, not that I liked Kevin Samuels and I really liked his message, I was seen as someone who was supporting a misogynist.
Yeah, most definitely. He was on the journey of trying to do good, you know, and had his a lot of his legacy tainted. So, but let's push the momentum forward. Let's move on to the topic at hand. You know, without further ado, you know, I'd like to welcome this gentleman to the podcast. You know, when I spoke to him, I was very impressed with his resume. You know, he's taken a business from 1 to 11 million in 2 years. He's built a successful business with dropshipping. He's paid an insurmountable amount of debt off through dropshipping. So I'd love to talk about his journey and everything dropshipping with him. Ben, welcome to the show, man. How are you doing?
And I'm doing great. That was some heavy stuff in the beginning there, but I actually, like, I don't know anything about the guy, but I appreciate, like, hearing your guys' perspective there on, like, just treating someone as a human. I think it's so important. Like, when we're looking online nowadays, it's easy to, like, be, you know, they call it armchair quarterback or Monday morning quarterback, right? Everyone's judging everyone else on how, you know, not great they are. We all have fucking skeletons. We're all standing in glass houses chucking stones at people. And so, yeah, man, I appreciate your little take there.
Really?
Coming on, let's go.
Out of all times, for Netflix to come in and interrupt.
Did it just turn on by itself?
By itself, you know.
You got some sorcery going up in Etobicoke out there, Alex.
Honestly, like the TV's off, guys. Like, you see that, yo? The TV's da-dum. Off.
And yo, that Netflix sound is like the sound of doom.
That is crazy, but you know. Ben, I really want to get into your story, you know, because I really feel like you have an interesting one. You know, first things first, where are you from, man? I'd love to get to know your journey and the way this conversation is going to go. You know, we break it in half. Half of it is we want to get to know you. Mm-hmm. The second half, we want to get to know actionable advice for entrepreneurs looking to get into dropshipping, you know. So, Ben, where are you from, my man?
Yeah, I'm an open book, so, and I love some of the questions you sent over early. You guys did really good job with the research here. So I'm from a small little town in western Wisconsin. I'm like 30 minutes from Minneapolis, St. Paul, but just over the border in Wisconsin. And I know, you're like, why do you live in Wisconsin when you could live anywhere? I've got two stepkids and one of my own, and I can't imagine raising kids without family. So the idea of moving away is great. I'd love to move to one of the, you know, income tax free states for sure, and somewhere warmer. But, you know, being here and being, we've been snowbirds the last couple of years, family's here to watch the kids, it's not so bad. And you're just out of the hustle and bustle of the city, which is, you know, where I grew up.
Nice.
Shout out to Texas, man.
How's it like?
I'd go Las Vegas, man.
How's it like living in Wisconsin, man? Like, when I think of Wisconsin, I think of Milwaukee. I heard it's like a very small city, you know, compared to other metropolitan places. I mean, that's like the major landmark, I know. But growing up where you grew up, what was the environment like? What were you doing for fun? Those type of things that really molded who you are today.
Yeah, when people ask, like, what is it like, I often reference, like, there's Minneapolis, and I'm heading east, right? Minneapolis, St. Paul, maybe, like, 20 minutes of suburbs, a big old river, and then you cross in Wisconsin, and there's one city, and then it's all, you know, big trucks and Trump flags, and, like, it's country, right? And I'm, like, 10 minutes into that country. So it's, you know, a lot of bumpkins, and, like, you know, leading into our conversation here, not a lot of examples of what entrepreneurship could be or how I could, you know, live a different life. My dad was a factory worker. My mom was a CNA. Wouldn't you know it, when I was in my early 20s, I was a factory worker and my wife was a CNA, right? That's all I knew. And I thought that's what life was, you know, mm-hmm. just make enough money to get by and live a simple life. And that's not what life can be for sure. But I live in a small town, man. There's only like 6,000 or 7,000 people in this town. And I'm way on the other side of the state. So I'm up by Minneapolis, St. Paul, you know, Milwaukee and Madison are on the bottom and in the far east side of the state.
Yeah, what's up, St. Paul? Yeah, what's a CNA, man?
Say that again?
What's a CNA? CNA.
Certified Nursing Assistant. So they like they help nurses at a hospital, or a lot of them work at, my wife did, my mom did, at a nursing home.
Mm. You're actually the second guest from St. Paul, like the St. Paul area, you know, to join the podcast. We had another gentleman on from St. Paul that worked in wellness homes. And was giving, had a business that was creating like wellness homes for people to heal from surgeries and rehabs mm-hmm. and all that stuff like that. But one thing I found very interesting, you know, was your journey at Walmart, you know. Walk us through what happened there.
Yeah, so look, I was following in the footsteps of my father, right? I was working, first started at a Menards distribution center, which if you're not from the Midwest, it's kind of like Lowe's and Home Depot pretty much. Mm-hmm. And made the upgrade to the Walmart distribution center, where I made a little bit more, you know, pretty good pay for around here for being a warehouse job. And I worked there for 9 years trying to climb that ladder, like ended up switching from throwing boxes to throwing bigger boxes to driving a forklift to driving the yard truck. And all I wanted to do was, like, you know, scale the ladder. I thought that's all that I could do, right? And I really wanted to get the first shift, which was the holy grail at this mm-hmm. distribution center. And after about 8 years, almost 9 years, I made it to first shift. And I remember that first day vividly. I walked in, it's 4 a.m. in the morning, and I'm like, you know, I made it, right? I made it to first shift. Yeah. And everyone there was just dead inside. They all just, mm-hmm. I knew right then and there, like, oh shit, I'm going to be here for, you know, I think I was 29 at the time. I'm going to be here the rest of my life. And I made it. Like, that's, I think that's when I really started waking up to, like, there has to be more to this. There has to be more to life. I knew I couldn't continue doing what I was doing. And yeah, Walmart definitely wasn't it for me.
And how many years, just get some context leading up to that, to get to that point, like, were you working in, like, the distribution centers to get to this first shift point?
Yeah, it took 8 years. It's been a little while now. So somewhere in between like 7 and 9. I think I left there at like 9.5 years. So probably have to scale back a couple of years when I made it to first shift. But yeah, 7 years of, you know, again, transferring around. I was doing a lot in the distribution center here in Wisconsin. I transferred to one that's in Minneapolis for a little while, mm-hmm. thinking I could scale the ladder there. Ended up transferring back. And yeah, none of them were taking me to where I thought I wanted to go, which was, you know, they call it a coach there. Instead of a manager, you become a coach, because we're all a team, right? So I was trying to become a coach. I thought that's was the next great thing.
That was the pinnacle of, like, that career path.
Yeah, for sure.
Jeez.
What does the first shift really mean? Like, what is that? What do you do with that?
Yeah, so that building was opened roughly 20 years ago, probably a little more now. And so everybody who got there, when they were on first shift, they weren't leaving, right? They worked 4 days a week. They worked 4 tens, 5 to 3, 4 to 2. That's a pretty good schedule. And so you really couldn't get to first shift. Nobody was leaving. And so you had to put in years and years and years before you could put in a transfer and be someone who could actually get qualified to be accepted for one of the open jobs on first shift. So that was kind of the holy grail. I worked second shift for a very long time, 3 to 1 in the morning, which wasn't bad. I'd go to work at 3, get home at 1, play Call of Duty till 5 a.m. and wake up and do it all over again. And just, you know, striving to get to that first shift, which, again, wasn't all it was cracked up to be for sure.
Yeah. Did you feel dead inside?
I didn't know what to expect. And like when I got, like I said, I got there and everyone just looked dead. And I legitimately took a note, and I have it over here. I went into the bathroom at 5:55 in the morning and I wrote, "I must begin setting goals and formulating a plan for the future. Working for this place is slowly driving me insane. Find your passion and begin. Set goals, set an action plan, begin the first steps immediately." And I was wrecked that day. I was just like, I couldn't go on knowing this was going to be the rest of my life.
Yeah. And, you know, like, a lot of people, when they get to that point, they must have been having, like, some thoughts built up to really like, you know, be like, okay, you know what? There has to be more to it. Was it just instantly like when you walked in, you're like, okay, there's more to this? Or was it maybe a year in the making? You're like, man, how am I going to keep doing this? How much can I keep going? Were you enjoying it? Or did you just like arrive there, you saw all these faces and you're like, boom, like I'm done. Just to go from like a goal mindset in like an instant, it seems crazy to me. So I want to get some feedback into your mindset building up to that point.
Yeah, to my recollection, it was within a month. So I took that note again on May, I want to say it's on my website, May 12th. And I want to say I transferred in like late March or April to first shift. So it was within a month where I was like, this cannot be it. Like I thought when I got there, I think people do this a lot in all parts of your life. When I get there, I'll be happy. And the reality is it's the journey, right? And so I thought when I get there, I'm going to be happy. And I wasn't, right? And so I knew I needed change, and I took that note. I had no idea where I was going to go. I had no idea what else there even could be. I just knew there had to be more. There had to be something else other than this. And there was a part of me that thought about going to college for something I hated. It was accounting at the time that I was considering. And it was just, I knew I had the brains for something. I just didn't know how to use it. Hey, yeah. Can I let this cat out of here real quick? I had no idea he was in here. That's amazing.
No worries. Sure. It took a quick second.
He's meowing at my leg.
Yeah, you know, Ben, you know they say like when you make a decision on something, like when you make, there's moments in my life that's happened before. Like I'm like, you know, I'm done with this. I'm finished. And you thought that you can never get over this hump. But like once you make that decision, like something happens within your mindset that just shows you the way. You know, like you start noticing opportunities, you start meeting people. Like subconsciously, when you say, I'm finished, I'm ready for the next stage in your life, new things start making themselves available to you where you thought it was impossible before.
Yeah, I truly believe that stuff is around constantly, and that mm-hmm. you're just not perceiving all of reality, right? Science says we perceive like 1/1,000,000th of reality, which is bananas in itself, let alone like your brain can only take in so much, right? So it's only taking in what you've told it to start taking in. And once you decide, hey, I want something different, all of a sudden your brain starts showing you the things that were already there the entire time. You just weren't perceiving them because they weren't part of the story you were building for yourself. And so I do believe this was around the whole time. And maybe I had already heard a podcast about this or heard something about online business or anything. I know I had started some random stuff in the past that didn't work out. And so, I think I was just more open to it at the time.
Most definitely. And one thing I want to note on that, was a big part of your life as well, is that you kind of had your back up against the wall. You know, you were in debt heavily, right?
Yeah, so I was pretty heavy in consumer debt. I know I didn't go to college, but I moved to the college town with my buddies and just drank a lot of beer. And, you know, at that age, credit card companies are bombarding you. And so I took on a few, and then I probably bought beer or something even dumber. I have no idea. But it just kept adding up and adding up, and I'd pay the minimum and you know, get another card for $1,000 and add it up. And so I brought quite a bit of debt to my marriage, and my she's now my ex-wife. She also brought some debt to that marriage as well. And we ended up being roughly $40,000 in consumer debt from the moment we got married and really until I was able to pay it off thanks to one of these businesses.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible, man. Whew, yeah. 40K in debt, man. That hits. That hits to hear.
Yo, the interest rate on that must have been crazy, eh?
Yeah, when you're like, first off, when you're young and then you like ruin your credit on top of that, you're getting 20, 30% APRs and you don't know any better, right? You're, like you're paying the minimum payment. Maybe a couple points of that is going to principal, but every month you're just like, well, I'm going to be paying this $25 or $35 a month on each one of these cards forever. And so I'm not sure I knew any better. And when I was a kid, like I grew up relatively poor. My dad did what he could to make life good for us. And, you know, I remember him showing me, hey, we're going to put this vacation. I was like 12. We took our first vacation. We drove our minivan to Colorado to see some family. He's like, I'm going to put this on this 0% card that they just offered me. And then 6 months later, he's like, now I'm going to rob Peter to pay Paul. I'm going to take this 0% mm-hmm. card and pay it on this one. And like, so that was normal to wow. me. I just assumed you have a bunch of debt and you live life that way. I really didn't know any better.
Mm-hmm. So you had like no financial literacy around you to show you like, okay, these are your assets. These are liabilities. Like don't get a credit card, build up your savings. Like there was nothing like that for you when growing up?
No, wow. I had nothing. No financial literacy. Look, I think that's a real problem today. I don't think even what little they teach in schools, not the best advice, right? Yeah, I'm not sure I agree with the advice that is out there, as well as saving. If we didn't learn anything in the last 2 years, it's that inflation will destroy what your dollar can buy, and saving money is actually one of the worst things that you can do.
Mm-hmm. No, most definitely. And honestly, I have a conspiracy theory on that, that they don't want you to learn. You know, like, why would the
As young kids? Like, they don't want us to teach us about, like, accounting, paying taxes, all that jazz, eh? Because it's such a fundamental part of life. And, like, I'm like, why don't they teach that? Are they teaching us, like, parabolas? Well, we don't even use that after grade 7.
Yeah, but if you look at, as industry was coming about, that's when school came about, right? They were teaching us how to go work a 9-to-5 job. They were teaching us how to sit still and obey orders. And we've kind of doing the same thing still in school. They haven't really updated the curriculum. It's very whitewashed, as I'm sure you guys both know. And so, it's all fucked up, man. You can spend the money on going to college, or you can spend a quarter of that and go invest in yourself and learn how business works, learn how finances work, learn one skill, and you're going to be able to make more than you would make going to college, in my opinion, if you're willing to do the work and put in the work.
Most definitely. And now, like, companies aren't even recognizing college like that as much anymore. Like, you can literally go to Coursera and do a Google course and get a job at Google. It's a literal pathway without college. It's a reality that a lot of people can do now. You know, so it's very interesting to see, like, the differences between the two of them. But let's get back to your story, man. What was the transition from working at Walmart to going into dropshipping? Could you break that down for us? Because I think that was a really interesting part of your life.
Yeah, so after I wrote that note, that was in May, sometime around mid-May. I can pull up my website if we want to get the exact date here. But sometime in May, and then I was just like, what can I do, right? So one of my buddies was flipping stuff at garage sales. This is the first I'd heard of it. He showed me how to, you know, open the eBay app, go to a garage sale, likely find something new that somebody still has sitting there, scan it, for sure buy the new one because you're going to get it for cheap. Then he was like, you know, have an eye for X, Y, and Z. For him, it was like golf clubs. And so I started flipping stuff. And then I realized quite quickly that you could make some money, but this was not going to go anywhere, right? First off, summer's only like 3 or 4 months up here, and like, it's over. There's no more garage sales to go to. And then, you know, there's just only so many, right? And I knew it wasn't scalable. I started looking into, like, going to the clearance aisle at Walmart and Target or TJ Maxx or whatever was around here, and trying to find ways to flip stuff. And it all worked. Don't get me wrong. All of that stuff works, and you can make a few bucks. It's going to be a lot of fucking hard work. But I knew it wasn't scale. I just didn't see a path forward. I didn't see how this could be something I could maintain. It was definitely something I could make a few hundred extra dollars a month and work my full-time job. But that's not what I was after. I was looking for something that could, you know, alter the trajectory of my life. And so I started listening to podcasts, and I stumbled on the word dropshipping, which wasn't as prominent in 2014, 2015 as it is today, where, like you guys said earlier in the show, there's, you know, kids standing next to their rented Lambo and showing you fake screenshots and things like that. And so I stumbled on a course teaching high ticket dropshipping, and that's where I really dove in. I don't think I even learned anything about, you know, low ticket dropshipping, AliExpress, Alibaba, things like that back then at all. The first thing I stumbled upon was high ticket dropshipping, and it made sense. It really made sense from a business standpoint that you're building a real asset. You're not just building something turn and burn. This isn't cash. You're actually building a real business. And that stuck with me. And the other side of it was, one of the major affiliates for this course lived in Chiang Mai, Thailand, and I was sold. I was like, oh, I can live on a beach and make $2,000. That's the life I want. I was sold. It's all bullshit, by the way. But like, I was sold on, like, this is what life could be. And that was enough for me to take the next step, which was that course was for sale. He said he was raising the prices. I thought it was marketing bullshit and didn't buy. And then he actually raised the prices. And he ran a quick sale. And the day he ran a sale, a credit card showed up on my table with a $1,000 credit limit, which is all you fucking get when you're $40,000 in debt. And I was like, this is a sign. I talked to my ex-wife and I said, I want to do this. I want to give this a real shot. If it fails, I'll go back to school again for accounting. Like I said, thank God that didn't happen. I hate accounting. But I'll give this a real go. And if not, I'll go to college, something to, like, take care of our family. And that was the day. It was January 11th, 2015. And I took the plunge, and my life's been different ever since. I'll say that.
Damn, that's crazy. So,
yeah, it's nuts. Go ahead, Owen.
No, I was going to say, 40K in debt, you take another $1,000 card to pay for a course, which, like, has no immediate ROI. what's a conversation between you and your wife, man? Like, because you must have had the most supportive ex-wife at that point to give you like the license to add more debt with no like plan of like, okay, this is gonna yield me back 5K in 4 months. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I don't think neither one of us knew even what ROI meant at that time, right? And so I think we were both looking at, like, for me, it was like, just this seemed like a real opportunity that I could put, like, I've always been really smart. I've been smarter than I taught my class in first grade math. I didn't go to most of high school, like literally almost all of high school. I had no idea I had sleep apnea. I would sleep till noon. My friends would wake me up with a joint. I'd go back for two classes, and that was my whole high school. And I had to do these booklets and pass. And I did a semester and a half's worth of booklets in one night and graduated high school. Like, I've got a brain. I just had no idea how to use it. It led me to like some, you know, being an awful person and drinking a lot of alcohol and doing a lot of drugs. It led me in wrong paths. And this felt like a moment where I could apply myself and do something good. And I, you know, being part of her family, her dad was the local dentist, her mom worked for him. So I kind of got an idea of like, oh, you could do something else. Her brother started an insurance company, which was like top 50 fastest growing company in Minnesota. So I got to like, be inspired by like, there might be something more here. And so this just really felt like an opportunity to me. And I think I pitched it well. I don't think she was thrilled about it, but at the same time, we were 40K in debt. What's another $1,000 if this maybe gives us an opportunity to get out from under this hell that we were living in?
So let's get into it. You know, let's get into the drop shipping, because you mentioned something, and I guess we can start off here, is that you kind of took a little bit of a shit on the Alibaba low ticket drop shipping. What's your opinion on those guys?
It's hard, right? So there's a lot of people out there shilling stuff that just doesn't make sense. Like the fact that you're going to go on TikTok, find the hot product, source it from AliExpress, flip up a website, run some Facebook ads, promise 40-day delivery to people, sell them like this thing I saw on TikTok. It's like a monocle, right? That's supposed to be like 50X. And of course, the TikTok ad is like showing you zooming in on some chick on the beach. And I was like, all right, I just want to see the whole process here. So I bought one to see the funnel. This thing sucks. It doesn't even work. It took 40 days to get here, and it showed up in like a heavily taped box with Chinese writing on it. Like, what kind of brand experience is that?
Very toxic too.
Right. And so like, you, that's not a real business, right? Can you make some money? 100%. Whoever thought of fidget spinners, they did well. There's a lot of products that probably did well. And I have no issue with like, if that's your goal, if you're going in and you're trying to do a cash grab, great. I personally would rather take care of the human behind the screen who's actually raising their hand and saying, I want one of these. And I'd rather build a real business. So, and that, like, the big thing for me is when you talk low ticket, like, this person had to do a video on TikTok of zooming in on some girl's butt on the beach in order to get anyone to buy this monocle, right? When I'm selling high ticket products, they're all ones you've definitely heard of. They're all from brands you know, and people are already searching for these things. So I don't have to go on Facebook and run an ad that you know generates interest. I don't have to do demand generation. I have to do demand capture, which mostly happens on Google. People are already searching for these products or these type of products, and I simply need to step in front of them.
Let's talk about that for a quick second. Demand generation versus, demand fulfillment. You know, I like to call it hunting, you know, having a bloody neck. You know, that's what Sabri Subi calls it. You know, I'm not sure if you're familiar with him.
I'm not.
Someone's searching for the solution, you know, on Google. Or as on Facebook, you're more so distracting and pulling from that difference, you know, from that thing you're looking for, that hit of dopamine you're doing, that, you know, soft porn that you're looking at on social media. You know, what is your opinion on Facebook versus Google when it comes to ads? Because I noticed that you're heavily on the Google side, but I'd love to hear your argument between the two.
Yeah. So again, demand capture versus demand generation. If first off, you have to like admit Facebook is the greatest marketing thing that's ever happened to human existence. Like, it is the greatest machine that's ever existed. It's only gotten better. It's only gotten more expensive to go with it, but it's amazing, right? It's amazing at what it does. I just don't want to play that game. I don't want to have to continually make creative. I don't want to have to burn through audiences and find a new audience. I personally like playing the keyword game. Everything I do is through a keyword lens, right? And so if I'm selling a brand of 3D printers and someone wants that exact model, like, they're likely going to go to Google and type in that brand and that model. That's pretty simple for me to run a shopping ad or a text ad or, you know, create some content or rank a product page through SEO, right? It's all keywords. And so I don't think there's a versus. It's definitely an end. Like, it's not or, it's an end game, right? Like, they both have their purposes. I use Facebook, but I use it in a different purpose than demand generation. Like, if I'm selling an infrared sauna for $3,000, the likelihood that I can put an ad in front of you that you're like, oh my God, a sauna, I want to buy one right now, it's not going to happen, right? And so I might capture you on Google, and maybe it's on a higher level term and I need to, you know, email market you down the funnel, or capture you on a middle of the term funnel, middle of the funnel term, and run remarketing ads on Facebook, or just stay in front of you, or redirect you back to content. So I think they both have a purpose. I'm definitely more of a Google guy. If you're going to make me pick, I'm picking Google all day long.
What do you think, Owen?
About Facebook or Google?
Yeah, I'd love to get your opinion. I usually take the reins here because, you know, I'm a Facebook marketer. I don't know if I told you, Ben, but I'm a Facebook marketer, you know. Owen, I'd love to get your opinion on it too. You know, we can have a little, like, fireside.
A little powwow. I mean, I just want to start saying, like, I'm not as advanced as both of you guys when it comes to, like, digital marketing, like, with Facebook or Google. I am familiar with both platforms, but if I had to choose one, I'd definitely go with Facebook, just because a lot of the stuff I've sold in the past were more for, like, they're like smaller items, right? They'll be like, okay, home and goods stuff where I can create a brand around, I can create a website, and people are searching for these little knickknacks and gadgets that they can find at the kitchen. I find Google a little bit more complex to use because, you know, you have all these different ads you can run, and it's not as fun or sexy to run those ads and, like, to really play with audiences. I think the Facebook platform is a lot more intuitive to really organize and to really get your data and, you know, see what people are liking, seeing who to target, and just, like, the whole visual aspect. As a new beginner, I'm definitely attracted to Facebook. I think Google takes a lot more to master when you're coming into it, from what I've done with it in the past. So I'm definitely, like, more of, like, a Facebook, you know, create audiences, make great creative, put it on IG, put it on Facebook feed, create all these different, you know, nice videos you can use. So, or put on Reels these days. So that is my take on it.
You know what? As you say that, I think something hit me. Like, creating Facebook ads makes me feel like you're baking, whereas creating with Google feels like you're using a hammer. You know what I'm saying?
explain this analogy, bro. Baking and a hammer.
Yeah, because with Facebook, you're naturally getting these dopamine hits of seeing your ad live. You're you know, taking your time to play with these audiences and see what's out there. The same way when you're baking a cake, you're like, maybe if I added a little bit of sugar in here, maybe if I added a little bit of this in there, you know, it's really free and open when it comes to baking or cooking for, you know. Whereas with Google, you're more so like, no, this hammer needs to hit there. And you know what I'm saying? You are being precise. Ain't no fun in Google keywords. You're like, all right, these are the keywords. These will need to hit. This is what it is, period. You know, there isn't as much leeway in Google to feel creative and feel like you're creating something new that will hit as much. You know, Ben, what do you think about that analogy?
I've never heard it before. Shocking.
Yeah, that was off the baking. Top, baby. That was fresh.
Straight bars. Now. Straight bars, you know? That's some e-com. That's some e-com lines right there, bro. Put that in a verse.
Look, it's funny how Owen thinks Facebook is easier than Google. And I'm so the opposite. Like, I get Facebook. I've used it. But I'm a wizard at Google, right? And so when I look at Facebook, my eyes get all glossy and it's confusing to me. So maybe we should work together here on some campaign. But, like, so yeah, your analogy, like, Google prints money if you can hammer the right keywords, though, right? Like, it's not a nail that you hammer in and it's over. You just keep hammering that nail, right? And so once you've narrowed down your keywords, you're golden, right? But there is some fun you can have on there, right? Like, first off, you know, run a shopping funnel. If it's low ticket, just run the smart shopping. Google's better than you. If it's high ticket, you're going to have to run a priority funnel so you can really target the right keywords. Run your text ads on those same keywords so that you own the search engine results page. Run remarketing to content on the display network. But you can have some fun on that display network as far as targeting topics or in-market audiences or keywords or showing yourself on certain like if you see a blog, you're like, this blog hits home and they got some AdSense on the side, you can own that page if you want to. Same with YouTube. You can really you can take a search term, someone's searching on Google, and then Google will build an audience of those people and you can run YouTube ads to them on YouTube. But like, that's super powerful, right? If you know, if you know, again, going back to that sauna analogy, if they searched a very specific sauna, you know, like that's a very bottom of the funnel, ready to buy audience, right? And you can go run an ad to them on YouTube. So I think, look, they're two different animals. And again, I think it's an and, it's not an or, but they're both really powerful. It's amazing the world we live in, like the marketing we have available to us. We don't have to go run a newspaper ad or, you know, run a TV ad or something. Like there's just so much available to us as marketers.
Most definitely. TV ads are dead. Like you're never going to see people. It's funny, so I hear a lot of Canadian marketing agencies still talk about TV, and I'm like, what? Like, I can't even fathom. But I definitely agree, you know, for brands that are really trying to develop a, you know, 100-year long-lasting brand, you need to be on both, you know. And matter of fact, I'd even stress this, if you're only doing Facebook ads, you suck. Point blank, if you're only doing Facebook ads, you are not doing good business. You know, if you're only doing Facebook ads for your only, you're not doing good business. You don't have your good email set up. You know, you don't have a good landing page set up. If Facebook ads is the main thing you're doing for your business, you're not doing a good job. And that's coming from a Facebook manager, Facebook ads marketer, you know. Now, let's take a step back for a second. Let's talk to the everyday entrepreneur. That's like, all right, where do I start with this? You know, I want to talk to you about Google Ads, and then we're going to talk about, you know, bare bones, just getting started with high ticket dropshipping. So let's say I'm a journal owner. You know, let's say I'm, shout out to Cheryl. Let's say I'm Cheryl, right? And I want to do my first Google Ads. Cheryl's a past guest on our podcast. What would you say she should do to launch some successful Google ad campaigns?
What does she sell?
Journals.
What's the price point?
Affirmation journals. You know, shout out to Cheryl. Please Notes Goods.
Is it pretty low, like $20-ish?
No, like $40.
Okay. Look, so I'm a big fan of doing the keyword research yourself, like looking into it, right? So I come from the high ticket world where you need to run a priority funnel in Google Shopping. So all that is, I know it sounds complex, but all that is Google has a priority function in there. So if you run one campaign, it'll start as a high priority. That's the standard Google Shopping campaign if you do manual CPC. That says everything has to fire into high priority. And then you can set up another campaign that's just a duplicate, but change the priority to medium. And the only way keywords can ever get to medium, even if you're bidding more, is by using a negative keyword in high and saying, this doesn't belong here, and then I'll push to medium, right? And you can bid a little more. And then for your like super exact keywords, you can push them even one step further. So I'm a big fan of using priority funnels to, number one, just like start deciphering the keywords that you get and push them down yourself and understand. For low ticket, this didn't used to be the case. I don't know if you even understand where the smart engine from Google came from. That's a really cool story by itself. But for lower ticket, their smart shopping just works. So if you can create your data feed and send it over and actually, like, you know, put all of the columns in there that you can, and there's a ton of them that you can use, fill them all out, give Google all of the information they need, and run smart shopping, or nowadays performance max. Set your target ROAS. I would maybe not set it for the first month and just let it run, and then run, and then set a target ROAS for month number two. Google's going to do the job for you. Like, they're really good at what they do, and it's only getting better. Their AI engine is getting extremely good. So for a low ticket item, that's where I would start. I would start with smart shopping or performance max, build it all out, make sure your feed's really built out, and start that. The problem with those two campaigns is you get zero data. Google doesn't tell you a single thing of like, here's the keywords that are converting. So this is where I recommend doing your own keyword research so that you can go own a long tail keyword that's a little less expensive. I would imagine if you ran a text ad for affirmation journal, that's going to cost you, right? There's probably a lot of people bidding on that, and Google's an auction. And so maybe you can find something more long tail that you can own. Definitely go own your brand name, so somebody doesn't own your brand name on top of you. And then at that point, you should have dynamic remarketing set up, which is pretty simple. Just run a display campaign and choose your feed. And Google, you have to put a little code on your website, but choose that and Google will just chase people around. Like, that's the bare minimum you should do, is chase people around with pictures of your product. I would tend to tell you to remarket to people with content, right? If they came to your site, number one, 100 people came to your site, industry average is like 2% conversion rate. That means 98 people raised their hand and said, I'm interested. And they left your website because you didn't give them what they were looking for, right? So chase them around with content that is going to answer questions they have or give them value and move them down to how they can purchase your product, which is ultimately going to solve the problem that they came searching for in the first place. Is that too much?
That felt like a lot of big gems in there. For a beginner, how should they do keyword research? Let's start there.
Yeah, this is a loaded topic. SEO makes my nerdy little heart smile, so I could talk about this stuff all day long as far as keyword research.
My nerdy little heart smile. I'm taking that. All right.
You got to start with your main keyword, and you have to like work your way out from there. So if you go put your, and I'll just do it on in real time while I'm talking to you, just so I can like do this, right? So I'm going to put affirmation journal. And I'm just searching Google Affirmation Journal, right? The first thing you can do, number one, go get the Chrome extension called Keywords Everywhere. It's a gold mine and it's absolutely free. Keywords Everywhere Chrome extension. Love it. If you don't have that, just simply scroll all the way to the bottom and Google's going to give you some keywords it thinks are similar. I consider them LSI keywords, supporting keywords, right? And so I see Affirmation Journal examples, Affirmation Journal PDF, best Affirmation Journals, Affirmation Journal template, app, Amazon online, positive affirmation journal, PDF, things like that, right? So now we've expanded one level. And then you can take each one of those and also go search that and then scroll to the bottom and look at that. And that's going to take you at a whole nother level, right? And so what you're trying to do is, and this is super complex, but if go Google HubSpot cluster content, if you want to see what this looks like, what you're trying to do is affirmation journals, clearly the main keyword here. You want to find all the supporting keywords around it, the content you can build. And if you do this, you're going to find all of the questions your customers are asking. You're going to find all of the supporting keywords through which you can either build a collection page or build a blog post or a listicle or whatever Google's asking for that term. That's where I would start with that. Another great place is the people also ask section in Google here. And if you just click one, like the very first one says, what do you write in a journal affirmation? If I open that one up, now Google added three more, right? If I open the next one, they'll add three more. And so you can just kind of go down this rabbit hole of these long tail questions that end up turning into great content for you. And then probably my most recommended resource is just answerthepublic.com. If you go to answerthepublic.com and you put in affirmation journal, it's going to spit out hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of keywords for you of different questions and different ways people are using that keyword in their search phrases. And if you don't have an aha moment looking through there of like really understanding the person behind you and why they're searching the things they're searching, I'd be shocked. Like it's going to lead you in the right direction for keywords you should go after and understanding, all right, this person just heard about affirmation journals. I'm going to need to educate them on some of these questions that make sense for top of the funnel. All right, this person's heard of affirmation. Now they're wondering whether they need like positive, they want a template, or they want some of the other questions that are involved there. You know where they're at in the funnel. And so you can just answer those questions that are surrounding that. And you can kind of group them together as these are top of funnel terms, these are middle of the funnel terms, and these are bottom of the funnel terms. And if I were you, I would run ads on the bottom of the funnel, and I would run remarketing on the medium and top of the funnel, middle and top of the funnel, just to get them back into it.
Man, a lot of big gems there. To add on to that, I know Keywords Everywhere is a really good tool. I've used that. Google Trends is another one. I'd say is really helpful. As well, I've done the YouTube route as well too, because some people YouTube search their their keywords. That people will, instead of Googling it, they'll YouTube it because they want to find an answer on YouTube. And you can use TubeBuddy, which is free, and you can see what keywords are ranking on TubeBuddy. That's one of the main tools we use, as well as the vidIQ. The two big things that I also add on to those as tools you can find to see what people are searching when it comes to your product or service. Now,
a little hack on both of those real quick is like, just search affirmation journal and then you'll be on the search screen. Go back up to the bar and just hit a space after affirmation journal. It's going to give you a whole bunch of examples. Go back to the beginning, put a space in front and then hit A, and it'll give you like all the A words that go with affirmation journal. And hit B. You know what I mean? Like just Google and YouTube are going to give you everything you've ever wanted to know. It's just, are you willing to sit down and do the work for a few hours and gather all the data?
No, I completely agree. And the traditional thing that a lot of people do is they use it in incognito mode, because a lot of times Google will put specific terms in front of you that you've already searched for, you know. So just be mindful of that as well if you're doing keyword research. Now I want to get into drop shipping. Now let's get into the high ticket drop shipping, Ben.
Yes, sir.